UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Enhanced recovery after surgery programs aim to hasten functional recovery and improve postoperative outcomes. Here to tell us about the success in gynecologic oncology is Dr. Charles Leith III. He's a professor in the Division of Gynecologic Oncology at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Leith. So tell us a little bit about the rationale behind ERAS programs and enhanced recovery programs in general.
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Melanie. And on behalf of my colleagues, Dr. Strawn and Howard Smith, I would like to provide a brief update about ERAS and gynecologic oncology. I think we all recognize that in the current time in medicine, certainly we're under a microscope and trying to figure out ways to improve outcomes, and everything is being measured. There's metrics for everything that's being done. You know, one of the areas that we look at in gynecologic oncology is the postoperative length of stay. And although a large number of our patients are able to have a minimally invasive surgery, either with traditional laparoscopic approaches or with robotic-assisted laparoscopy, we still perform a large number of exploratory laparotomy surgeries. And if we can find a way to perhaps decrease the length of stay for these individuals and improve their surgical outcomes, then that would be a very meaningful endpoint for us to tackle. And so a couple of years ago, several colleagues at the Mayo Clinic, among others, started to look at this whole idea of enhanced recovery after surgery. And, unfortunately in medicine, a lot of the things that are done, we don't necessarily have the level one evidence for. You know, you can't do a randomized controlled trial for everything that's out there. And so we started to look at this collectively and figure out many of the things that we thought we knew about surgery and about perioperative care, in fact, probably were not true. And so as we started to dig a little bit deeper, we figured out that there were some things that could be done that if we applied this to a group of patients undergoing, you know, a major abdominal surgery, we could improve their outcomes, get them out of the hospital quicker, and still have similar oncologic outcomes, which is clearly the most important thing to us as cancer surgeons.
So speak a little bit about what they're associated with, really, as far as your rationale. And also, have ERPs in general been widely adopted in gynecology and gynecologic oncology, or is this a newer progression?
Yeah, so, you know, I think what we've seen is that with this whole ERAS movement, we've tried to focus on the entire operative event. And that really occurs the first time you meet the patient in the clinic. Once you determine that she's going to need to go to the operating room, your surgical plan is in place. And that's where the education for ERAS starts. We discuss with the patient what the implications are, what we're trying to do. That's going to be reinforced by the nurses, also going back over many of the highlights that we've hit. At UAB, we have some programs where patients will be sent videos that they can review. These videos give them information both about ERAS in general and then a surgery-specific video that really talks about what they need to expect based on their operation. Again, when they see the anesthesia providers at their preoperative appointment, many of the aspects about perioperative pain control, allowing a clear liquid diet up until a couple of hours prior to surgery, which, again, used to be prohibited and almost heretical to allow a patient to drink a few hours before surgery, but now is really standard fare. And then again, the morning of surgery, going back through things, looking at the ways to increase or improve, rather, pain control postoperatively, ensuring that, you know, the aspects of the protocol have been stuck with.
So then if we're looking at these ERPs and ERAS, What are we seeing as some of the key elements in establishing a successful program? And is there a high degree of coordination that's required? Who's involved in all of this?
Yeah, so coordination is, if anything, that's probably the most important thing to get from this small, this brief interview, is the fact that this is not something that you can turn on almost like a light switch. When we first heard about ERAS and started to go through the process, it took about 5 months of reviewing the available information, of drilling down the potential variables that we would like to be able to track, and to figure out, could we really track those variables? And so it is a highly coordinated effort that, again, involves, you know, the providers as well as the nursing staff in the clinic, the anesthesia providers in the perioperative areas, both in the pre-op clinic as well as in the operating room, the nursing staff in the recovery room, and then ultimately both nurses and physicians in the post-op or on the post-operative ward. Taking, you know, those parts into account, we really can look at a lot of different things. One of the things that we wanted to look at was, you know, can we shorten the length of stay after an exploratory laparotomy? And so we can look at what is referred to as an O to E ratio, which is the observed to expected ratio. And really our goal was to decrease that, meaning that we thought the patients would stay for X period of time, and if we can decrease that based on the complexity of the surgery, their preoperative diagnosis, their other medical issues, then that certainly would be very beneficial. And we have benchmark information showing that as we've gone through this process, we've consistently been able to keep patient length of stay below the baseline. You know, the other thing that's important is when you think about doing surgery and having a goal of getting patients out of the hospital quicker, what you don't want to do is discharge everyone and then have everybody be readmitted, because that really defeats the purpose. It's clearly better for a patient to stay in the hospital a little bit longer than be discharged and then be readmitted, which is another one of the metrics that is tracked. And again, looking at our data, what we see is that we've been able to decrease our hospital readmission rate from the baseline, or what our pre-identified goal was. Again, we're not going to be able to prevent every readmission, but if we're sending patients home sooner, I think one of the things we want to see on the back end is that we're not having patients being readmitted. We're not sending them home too soon. I think another important aspect of that, of course, is that, you know, we really want to make sure that this is an opportunity for the majority of patients. Again, if you really kind of cherry pick and say, well, we're just going to do these three or four or five patients that that appear to be the healthiest so we can get the best data, then again, that's not really helping the majority of patients, because those are the patients that likely would have done well anyway. So our goal was that when we had this pathway up and running, that we really wanted to have this available to at least 90% of our patients undergoing a laparotomy. So again, that allows the patients that have other medical comorbidities, patients that, you know, maybe traditionally you would think would be at a little bit higher risk, to stay in the hospital longer, be readmitted, and other things along those lines, being able to benefit from these pathways.
Such interesting information on evaluating that impact of these programs, Dr. Leith. So now tell us some of the important components of the postoperative strategies: pain management, drains and catheters, early mobilization. Speak about how some of those come into play in this ERAS strategy.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. It's a perfect lead-in. So, you know, when we think about the post-operative experience for patients, I think one of the first things that we all noted was the improvement in post-operative pain control. I can literally remember my first patient where I walked into her hospital room post-operative day number one. She was sitting up. She was sitting in a chair. She had her own clothes on. She had her makeup on. She looked great. And I remember the residents telling me that she was post-op day number one, and I was almost looking at them quizzically thinking, there's no way she's post-op day number one. Maybe day two, but clearly she's not day one, but yet in fact she was. I think a lot of that, though, also gets back to the point that although we're thinking about post-operative pain control, what's important is really the preoperative pain control. And so the vast majority of these patients will get what's referred to as an intrathecal administration of medications, and so almost like a spinal shot, which is certainly, in our experience, has been associated with a significant decrease in postoperative pain. In addition, they'll get some oral pain medicines in the preoperative area, things like acetaminophen, gabapentin, and some others. And then postoperatively, we're getting them up the day of surgery. They're sitting in a chair. The day after surgery, postoperative day number one, they're walking around. And rather than going through the, you know, the typical clear liquid diets, maybe some full liquids before getting to a regular diet the second or third postoperative day, we really allow patients to eat normal food from the get-go. And so if they're hungry and they're ready to eat, they can eat right away. And really, I think those aspects of early ambulation, improved pain control, quick advancement to diet, and then also getting all catheters and lines out in a very timely fashion, usually on postoperative day number one, allows the patient to feel better. It allows them to become mobile a lot quicker. And then again, ultimately, should allow them to get out of the hospital quicker.
In summary, Dr. Leith, tell other physicians what you'd like them to know about the importance of an enhanced recovery after surgery program.
Well, I think that, again, the most important thing that we touched on earlier is, you know, this is not a light switch. It's not something you can turn on or off. And so the first question, of course, is, you know, what need is there? And certainly there is a need in multiple aspects of surgical care in the 21st century. At UAB, we have three current programs, or a fourth about to start: colorectal surgery in the urology department. They have this for patients undergoing a cystectomy, generally for bladder cancers. We have this in gynecologic oncology, and then our colleagues in the benign gynecology arena are also involved in this as well. And so I think that there are going to be other programs and other disciplines that are out there that likely can identify, you know, a group of patients that with the all-encompassing aspect or the approach of ERAS, that those patients can be benefited going forward. I think the other thing that's important is this is really a constant reassessment. Just because you set it, again, it's not on cruise control. You don't say, hey, this is great, we're ready to go. We've identified several aspects during the last year that we've been doing ERAS here in our GYN oncology division where patients probably should not undergo ERAS. There are, you know, some patient-related factors. For instance, if a patient comes in with a bowel obstruction, you know, maybe that's not the best patient there, just from a dietary standpoint and some of the other aspects that will allow us to tweak the algorithm and, again, figure out ways to improve outcomes for all patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Leith, for being with us today in this fascinating segment. You're listening to UAB Medcast. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 800-822-6478. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.